chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it?
Yes. Good.
Hello and welcome to Action Jacks. I'm Tim Allen. This is Dave Scatino on the board. SP Futures up 14 and a quarter. NASDAQ Futures up 88. We have one of the stocks in the Dow that has good earnings. Caterpillar is up 787, so that's a move up in the Dow. Dow's up 81, so let's see. That's probably two-thirds of the Dow move is the Caterpillar move. So we also have Microsoft up $1.54. Yesterday, very interesting day. We finished up a little bit, but on some of the stuff, or in the Dow, but the rest of the stuff we were not. But the actually, the Dow was down two. Not, I'm sorry, we were up a little bit on the Nasdaq, 12 cents. But the Dow was down 266. The S&P was down 23. It really fell off in the afternoon. If it wasn't for Google and Microsoft to the moon on their earnings, I mean, we had a really ugly day. But we did not, because those two were up, and now this morning we're making a lot of this back. Mr. Lou, you with us?
I am, sir. How are you?
I'm okay, confused as usual, but as we're going into tapering, the bonds are rallying, so I'm assuming that the Fed is buying every bond they can this week. I'm confused about our new lady who's nominated for the Comptroller of the Currency, who we haven't heard that outfit do anything in 12 years. All of a sudden, she wants to change the world.
She's a communist.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the Blackhawks. I don't know what. I'm absolutely confused there, which hopefully you can straighten me out on. Kevin helped yesterday.
Let me just talk real quickly about this woman that was nominated for the comptroller, who's the graduate of Moscow State University in 1989. I'm not joking. She's a communist, and that pretty much drives the train, I think, in terms of her worldview. Just to go back to what you and Kevin were talking about yesterday, she is a central bank planner. She believes in something, I mean, the term in the Soviet Union was Gosbank, or Sudarstveni Bank, the state bank. And Gosbank was responsible for all the financial and economic success that the Soviet Union had. And, she's one of those people that literally believes that, you know, the philosopher kings, to use Plato's term, should be running everything, and that the bankers have a much better idea of how to deal with the economy and all that than the market does. Her personal opinions, I think, are anathema to Western capitalism and Western values, and I am astounded that she's the nominee.
Now that you open up this subject, we got to give it a little bit of discussion here, because this is absolutely not a criticism of what you said. Matter of fact, I agree with everything you say, except somehow or another, Lou, we're getting there by gradualism. We don't have the Bolsheviks knocking off the Romanovs and installing a system, but we are hell bent on getting there. And once in a while, first of all, I don't think if you were to say, walk down the street, walk into bars and restaurants, other than you, I don't think there's 1 in 100 people that could even describe what the communist system was or is. Even know how it was supposed to work. Maybe me included. As a political system, I'm sure I don't really know, but as an economic system, I have a pretty good idea. But we're getting there by leaps and bounds. I mean, Hal Snar say the other day, I don't know if you listened in, he said that the government always wants any part of small businesses, despite what they say. He's, you know, an economics professor. He goes, it's like herding chickens. And he called it he didn't use the term fascist economic system like you do. He used it a Nazi system. He said, that's what the Nazis wanted. They wanted 4 businesses in every industry that they can control. and we are moving that way, every day. I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know whose idea it is. Unlike the revolution of the Romanovs, the Bolsheviks, we're getting there by a little bit, by a little bit, by a little bit. And I don't even know if there's somebody behind the curtain, but in our industry it has to do with, you know, monitoring people's outside jobs. Everybody's supposed to be monitoring somebody for somebody. I mean, it is an amazing assault on freedom.
Let me give you another example. So at the Air Force Academy, and I presume at the other military academies. The cadet squadrons have they established a wing, cadet wing diversity inclusion equity officer in response to establishing the position of a diversity inclusion and equity consultant, or position in the Air Force Academy hierarchy. This is a in my opinion, a totally unnecessary position and one that should be removed immediately. But the upshot of this is that they now have a cadet wing position on diversity and inclusion. I don't think they were quite aggressive enough to put the equity in there. But what is happening is this cadet office with the full connivance of an agreement of the leadership is now establishing these diversity and inclusion officers within each cadet squadron. Now, this may or may not sound like a good idea, but in practice, what it has developed into is a political officer in each cadet squadron, and that's the model. And if you're a student of Soviet history, you know exactly what this means.
Oh, sure.
Stalin's NKVD, which was the precursor to the KGB, established political officers as informants within each military unit, all the way down to sizes as small as companies, who monitored the political opinions and thought processes of the people in the unit, and then reported them back up the chain for either military discipline or simple removal within the military hierarchy. And this is repeating itself within one of our top service academies. The idea that you would put these people in this kind of, or these kinds of people into this kind of job, reflects a historical blindness and almost a willful disregard of you know, past historical trends and you know, analogous conditions within the Soviet military. But that, I find that to be incredibly disturbing. And I don't know if anybody's bothered to raise the alarm. I mean, I saw the memo on it that was issued a couple of months ago, saying, you know, we're going to have these things in here. And oh, by the way, here are acceptable topics for discussion or for use within the cadet squadron on you know, as they engage in certain types of activities related to training. Here are the acceptable topics for discussion. Here are the acceptable. It's the most bizarre thing that, as a student of Soviet history, it's the most bizarre thing that I could have imagined would occur there.
Well, that's what the Chinese are being accused
of. And that's just another. That's just another model or another indication of how pernicious this particular model is, and how this social justice activism, which is highly political, is working its way into every aspect of our culture.
Well, when you look at the banking part, this lady that you accuse of being communist, it's kind of a, it's always a question to me of where you start. I mean, you start here, and you look at this as something that you and I have seen before. I mean, you've read more about this stuff than me. I mean, I don't know that much about the Soviet Union, but you see what these guys did, and you see the parallels to what we're doing. I see the same thing with a lot of what the fascists did and what we're doing and how that all turned out. I mean, it's you and I see the parallels, and I think a lot of our listeners do too, because they certainly enjoy listening to you on Thursday. And but for somebody who just is around, somebody who's 30, 40 years old, that's a bad thing. I wouldn't like wouldn't mind being 30 again, but. When you look at the banking system right now, and you look at it, you say, this is a little odd. I mean, in some areas there is some competition. I mean, Illinois still, if you're in Chicago and you look at the banking system, you almost don't see a problem. Well, there's four small banks within 1,000 yards of our door here, and they're competing for your business, okay? Now, I wouldn't go anywhere near Citigroup or those places just on principle, but other places, that's not so. Now, the question is, are the banks now the intermediaries of people's money? Well, not really. They're not anymore. They're somehow tied up. The Fed, instead of just being a banker of last resort and to monitor the system, they're all over these guys to the point where, you know, a lot of them can't even give a loan. They can't. We could never get Andy used to be on the radio. We could never get Andy on anymore. Lakeside compliance. Oh no, you can never do that. What if somebody sues us? Andy would come on. He's a nice guy. He would talk about mortgages and he would give their rates. How the bleep are you afraid about that?
Well, you know, but this is okay. So you talk about incrementalism, and let's talk about how we get here. Every time we have a major financial blow up, the savings and loans crisis at the end of the '80s, a major recession, the disastrous events of 2008. Every time something like that happens, I know in Enron, people in positions of influence, our political elites, again, John McWhorter calls them the elects, scream, we got to do something to stop this. And the vast majority of people that listen say, well, yeah, something bad happened, and maybe we should do something to stop it. And the result is an increase, you know, because the people that you look at to stop it tend to be at the federal level. People look around and go, okay, we have to deal with this. The population needs us to deal with this. And so you get a regulatory reaction. And that regulatory reaction will take somebody up in an agency in D.C. or in an agency, you know, in a state government somewhere, says, here's a way to fix this. I think this is a way to fix this. And so we get a gradual, as you said, incrementalism, a gradual encroachment by these regulatory agencies into the savings and loan circumstances. But the banks are the obvious one, because we already have a federal agency that's supposed to be running or at least overseeing the banks to prevent a run on capital and prevent a loss of employment, massive loss of employment.
Well, okay, but now...
But I'm just saying, this is a natural... And their responses, you know, I mean, one of the things I laugh at this because I've known this for a long time, decades. The people that we have in charge are not necessarily the best and the brightest or the smartest or the most creative. They're in charge, especially in these large government bureaucracies, because of longevity.
Well, and while many of them
have a tremendous amount of, you know, of specialized knowledge about the regulatory state and how their particular little regulation world works, they don't understand the interplay of you know, these forces that we turn loose when we say, oh yeah, we're going to create this agency to monitor workplace safety. Well, if we can redefine workplace safety broadly enough, we can have that agency mandate that everybody in the workplace gets vaccinated.
Lou, the hardest thing.
I mean, that's the growth.
The hardest thing, if you imagine you've been on corporate boards, I never asked, it's not my business, but the hardest thing you would ever have is for somebody to drop a security manual of 500 pages in the middle of the boardroom and for somebody to try and get one of those pages out of there. Because, you know, some attorney, not like you, is going to say, oh, man, boy, what if we... If somebody ever found out that we pulled that page out of there and something ever happened.
No, but let me hold this thought. This goes right to the Scotty Bowman situation. So keep going and we'll talk about Bowman.
Well, I'm saying on the banking side, when you see what's happening, we have people in there now, and I don't think this is necessarily Powell's idea, but clearly Janet Yellen, after her $7 million getting paid for by these people and her speaking things, all of a sudden now, the solution to any problem in the financial system is to make sure the banks have so much friggin' money they couldn't possibly bleep up. That's the solution. But if you were to ask Powell about the next crisis, the first thing out of his trap is going to be, we've never seen the banks as well capitalized as they are now, so we think we're okay. Okay. You took money from other people to give them to the banks. Okay. So the next problem, the banks will survive or the rest of the people won't. I mean, Lou, if you look at it from the outside, it's insanity. But now this lady, you know, I'm going to speak for her a little bit. She looks at this system and says, okay, all we're doing is having four or five banks that all we, our entire 24 waking hours is making sure these guys got enough money. But by the way, they're not performing half the stuff that banks used to do. I mean, like I said, the OCC and those kinds of places, they go directly to the Fed if they have a problem. Maybe we don't need the Jimmy Dimon, Jamie Dimons, and 150 or 250 of his best buddies making millions of dollars in these banks as we pour money into them. Maybe we don't even need them. Maybe the Fed can just do it. Because, by the way, they're not doing much. You know,
because those of us in the Fed and those of us with experience are, in fact, the best.
Well, but I'm saying this, but this system,
what goes on.
This system right now, where banks don't really give loans to people, they just do credit cards. I mean, they're not really. I don't see anybody going to walk into Citigroup across the street here and get an auto loan. Do you? Or a loan for a small. But I mean, you might be able to go to Lakeside, or you might be able to go to Burling or someplace. But I'm saying we're at the point now where we've totally, you know, distended the system into God knows what, to where you look at it and say, well, maybe the Fed's doing most of it anyway. I mean, in our mind, in their mind, we're doing most of the same. What do we need these guys for?
More importantly, we're doing it because the people asked us to do it.
Well,
and we're just following the will of the people to keep the workplace safe, to keep the banking community stable, to prevent those bourgeois fat cats, the industrial class fat cats from stealing more money from the proletariat. I mean, that's where this ends up.
Well, which is what they do.
And yes.
What do you suppose the interest rate is at a regular bank now? I mean, if you're stuck somewhere where Wells Fargo is your only place, I'll bet it's $15 a month minimum if you're less than $5,000. And any time you take something out of a machine, they probably charge. I mean, some of that's gotten more competitive. And your credit card rate's what? 25%, and the bank's paying 1. I mean, Lou, could it get any worse?
I agree. And with respect to why this happens, again, it's happened as a result of crises, quote unquote crises, that are then exploited by the regulators, who say, okay, you want this fixed, here's how we're going to fix it, and it's going to result in some loss of personal freedom and personal privacy. I'm trying to imagine how much, you know, sort of ignorance or insulation from the real world it takes for Yellen and her people to propose that the IRS have access to every bank account with more than $600 in it that is engaging in transactions of more than $600.
Well, how much of that is directed at, I'll use you as my stalking horse here. How much of that is directed at people, I'm going to say like you, and like everybody else on the show, by the way, me too, that finds that, I mean, this is my new shtick, and I know you've heard, this is the first time you've heard it, how much of that is directed at people like us that we think that's such an outrage that we're going to spend, you know, 3 months of TV time, radio time, talking about it, and they pull it out, which now leaves, you know, 20,000 pages in the bill instead of 20,001. Meanwhile, we're totally ignoring the other stuff, and maybe the other stuff is worse than that.
I mean, that may be the case, but that wasn't put in there. That wasn't put in. That particular clause is such a political hand grenade that it wasn't put in there as a distraction. It was put in there because somebody believed that this was a good idea. And for Yellen to come out and say, yeah, I'm going to push this, the lack of awareness is stunning. That you would propose something like that that sets off alarm bells for almost every citizen in the country who has a bank account. And causes everybody to look around and say, what are these people doing? We're going to end up in a surveillance state.
Well, I think we're already there.
I'm pretty sure we actually are. But this kind of manifestation of political and economic control is chilling. And should be.
The
installation of political officers into cadets.
I don't disagree.
That are
saying
academies.
You and Carl.
Are you, it should be.
Are you and Carl This is how either naive I am or whatever, or bright. I don't know which half the time. When you go to the bank and you, $600 is low, but if you do anything over there, and I have, well, I won't say a lady friend, the people you talk to when you walk your dog, are they friends? I guess they are. Lady was working at the,
depends what your dog is doing.
Scruff was always sniffing. A terrier has to write a chapter every 30 feet, right? Well, he'd be sniffing, and he liked her dog Puck, right? And so Scruff and Puck were good buddies. So anyway, she was a systems lady that would put stuff into banks, and for, you know, for figuring out when somebody made cash transactions where they went. And I said, so this is the stuff like over 10,000. She goes, don't kid yourself. Everybody knows everything you do cash wise. And so it never dawned on me, Lou. I mean, you and Carl brought this up, and you guys are both adamant on it, by the way. And I'm sure you're right. It never dawned on me that once it got into the, quote, government, that the IRS couldn't find it. I guess maybe I never dreamed that they couldn't find it anyway. And so I'm not as appalled at the $600 piece, because I thought, I never thought that I could trust the government to keep whoever that report goes to on the $10,000. I could never trust that guy to keep it away from the IRS in the first place.
But again, my point is that not so much that this was being done, because I assumed that if they wanted the information, they could always come and get it. Just the fact that this was being proposed and the lack of awareness by the people who were proposing it, it tells you a lot about the mindset of the leadership class, the elect, and how they view the little people. I mean, would Janet Yellen appreciate somebody at a in a GS3 or GS4 position leaking her tax returns or leaking her bank account information because they disagreed with her position on marriage or some other social justice issue? Because that's what happened to Bill Gates and Bezos and the rest of them, 18 months ago?
Well, they put a wiretap on Elliot Spitzer.
Right. Because of that, the amount of cash he was moving through his account.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I know. They went after, you know, Martha Stewart, for God's sake, on some idiotic insider trading thing while ignoring the fact that Nancy Pelosi's husband was raking in cash, and not just her. Was it Loeffler?
Yeah.
In Georgia that sold the stock in advance of the, just shortly after getting the COVID briefing?
Got to head off to break here, but the worst I've ever seen, Lou, was with the three idiots, and I use the term idiots, who worked in the printing business in Wisconsin that printed Business Week. And they got these guys for looking at the Business Week column on like rail card loadings and something a day before it was published, and thought that was insider information, and prosecuted these guys. I mean, I thought it was a joke when I read it. Business Week.
This was a line. I know you got to move. This was a line from a movie that was funny at the time, but when you think about it, isn't so funny anymore. There was a government official. Some clerk who was being, you know, trying to get leverage on this guy. She said, "How would you like your very own personal IRS agent?" And it's funny, but when you think about it, it's really not, because we all know that's something that could happen.
Yeah, I know. Let's go to break, because I want to ask you some interesting questions about some of the industries now, Lou. SP Futures up 13, NASDAQ Futures up 86. We also want to talk about the Hawks. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P futures up 14. NASDAQ futures up 92. Again, this was a big turnaround from yesterday. I mean, yesterday we were up all day. We were up big all day. All of a sudden, near the end of the day, we started to slide, and we actually lost 23 points in the S&P and 266 points in the Dow. That's with Microsoft being up like $7 or $8. So if it wasn't for Microsoft and Google, who was up huge, we would have been down on the day pretty hard. And NASDAQ was actually up 12 cents, so I guess they made a new record by 12 cents. But that was yesterday. Now, today, like I said, we're up 1350 in the S&P, we're up 89 in the NASDAQ, and we're up 89 in the Dow. Most of that is Caterpillar, which is up, actually it's only up, Dow 87, it was just up $6. That's wild, just dropped $5. So, we've got Caterpillar up, we've got Microsoft up. Microsoft, who is now my favorite monopolist. I think those guys, have broken every rule in the book, but of course they'll never get called out on it. That's just the way that is. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 278, that's a full percent. Shanghai down 43, that's 1.2%. Hang Seng, which was down huge yesterday, is only down 0.3% today, or 73 points. Bank of Japan holds steady on their monetary policy. Today they had their meeting. Our guys are meeting next week, kind of early in the month, the second and third, so that's Tuesday and Wednesday. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 17.1%, the FTSE down 17.2%, and the CAC round up 35.5%. So CAC round is going in their own direction there this morning. Bonds, up a basis point, but only 1.54. They were 1.6. It's crazy. The more people are talking about inflation, the higher the bonds are going. We've got a big rally this week in bonds, which you would not expect. So I'm gonna make a little wager that after the $85 billion the Fed put on the balance sheet last week, they do at least that this week. So if they talk about tapering at all next week, it's gonna be from a new high in the balance sheet, which I think really, really sucks, but that would be me. Bund, up one basis point, but they're back down to -0.16. They made it up to -0.09, and now we're not even going right back the other way again. Japan, positive +0.09, where they've been like forever, right between 9 or 10 or 8. Oil down $1.30, $81.35. Brent down $1.34, $83.24. Natural gas down 9 cents. 610. So 609, 610, back down to 490, back up to 610. Never have I seen, unless we've had some winter where it's been, you know, 30 below zero or something. I've never seen natural gas move like this in October, for God's sake. RBOB down 3 cents, 241. Gold is up 340 now to 1802, back up over 1800. Silver down 6 cents, 2413. Copper up 5 cents, 444. And crypto bouncing back, 60,901, up 2200. David, what do you got? It's a lot of stuff there. What do you got for us, traffic weather?
A lot of stuff this morning. 637 in Chicago. Weather this morning currently is 53 and cloudy. Our highs today will hit 56, but we'll have rain showers most of the day. For our Phoenix listeners, start of the day 55 in clear skies. The highs today will be 89 and sunny. Traffic build up normal. We have a normal rush hour build up on the Kennedy Eisenhower due to road construction. We have an accident at Irving Park Road at Keeler, and a disabled vehicle blocking the left lane at Tri-State right before 31st Street. In sports, Major League Baseball World Series, Houston wins Game 2, 7-2. In the NBA, the Bulls take on the Knicks tonight. The Suns drop one to the Kings last night on a buzzer beater, 110-107. In the NHL, the Hawks lose again in overtime to the Maple Leafs, 3-2. Arizona takes on Tampa Bay tonight. In the NFL, Packers at the undefeated Cardinals tonight, and the Bears are at home Sunday taking on the 49ers. Back to you, Tom.
What do you like tonight?
Well, it depends on who's playing. If Adams is playing for Green Bay, they got a couple guys that are hurt. Otherwise, I like Arizona. The line's 6.5 now.
If you're banged up, the Thursday night game is pretty nasty.
Yeah, if Devontae, you know, it depends on if they got their receivers. We'll see.
Lou, we want to talk a little bit about the Hawks, but when you look at, like, the earnings from, you know, I know I've been beating this inflation thing to death for like several years now, only because that's how long it's been coming. When you look at the Ford earnings yesterday, and they beat on this and that, and they're up $1.30 to trading 16.82. Lou, how the hell can you even? How can these guys with a straight face get out there and talk about revenue? I didn't look, I should have looked closer, but they have to be down in terms of cars from 2 years ago dramatically. And what have they done? They just, like, doubled the price? I mean, what are they making on these trucks now that are selling for 100 grand, 50 grand? I mean, does anybody think that...
I don't know, but I do know that if you've got a used car you want to sell and you don't need to buy another car right away, you can make quite a killing.
Yeah, and but I'm saying... Back in the 70s and 80s, there was a discipline. I don't know if it was put on people by the accountant, by the analysts, or what it was. There was a discipline that when you came out, or Mary Barra from GM, you'd have to come out and say, "Well, our revenue was here. By the way, we sold this many cars, and this is how much we raised the prices." And there's, you know, you had to tell people. I mean, I drove by some, like, two or three Chevy dealerships on my way back from Indiana last weekend, and maybe a Ford dealership. There's hardly anything on the lot, and the only pickup trucks that are out there, which are the ones that are the absolute top of the line, and they're getting, like, lists for these things. We're talking 80, 90 grand for a pickup truck, or you know, but I mean, they're gorgeous vehicles, but, I mean, I've heard of people paying over list for cars. I mean, if you want a car, you almost have to get a foreign car.
So supply demand. Well, I mean, there's an ongoing demand, and the supply is limited. So prices are going to go up. Supplies are limited by the fact they can't make them as quickly as they want to because of the chip shortage. There are other supply chain issues with respect to producing vehicles and getting them delivered. Is a problem because of the shortage of drivers. So on those carriers. So this is, you know, welcome to the, I could be partisan and welcome to the world that Joe Biden created, but this is a very complex issue that has multiple moving parts. But I absolutely do believe that you know, if we were having a great success, the president would be claiming it. So, you know, I don't have any problem tagging him with the failure.
Well, somewhere along the line, are they going to tell these guys you got to make some, like, regular pickups for people that actually work in this world and not the ones that you know, that somebody spends $200,000 or $100,000 for it. They're not using any chips on anything regular. It's all just high end.
No, I'm pretty sure that the chips go into even the basic vehicles because of emission controls and
I understand
and
that. But I'm saying
requirements like you have to put a backup camera on the car. And I mean, all of this, a tremendous amount of the computerization of an automobile is not on the bells and whistles you see on the dashboard, but on the emission control and fuel economy regulation devices that are you know in the engine.
Lunar.
Even like something as basic as a Ford Explorer has a fairly complex electronic system that regulates it. You know how many cylinders you're actually firing.
What I'm saying is, if you have if you don't have power seats, you don't have the power seat chip. If you don't have power windows, you don't have the power window chip. I mean, you have all the other ones in the motor, yes. But I mean, the more complicated it gets, the more chips you got. You got, man.
Agreed. Well, I would say, you know, go back and see how well rolling down windows sells on cars. I mean, I haven't driven a car where I've had to roll the window down in.
You're a big shot.
Probably 5 years.
You're a big shot. You know?
No, I rent cars. I mean, it just
I understand.
You can't. That you offer that to people and they're not interested.
I get it, but my point is when, that's why I use the term pickup truck is because there are guys that want one to look, you know, to there are guys that want one just because they want one. There's guys that want one because they haul stuff in it and they don't care what's in it. And there's guys that have the ones that cost $100,000 that are pretty sweet, right? I mean, I get it. What I'm saying is if you're Ford, you're going to skew that production towards the upper end. The one where you're, if I'm going to make 100 pickups, I'm going to make the ones I'm making $50,000 on, not the ones I'm making $5,000 on. I mean, that's only common sense, right? But where does that leave the guy wanting a low end pickup?
Well, he's going to buy the one where they make $50,000 because that's what's there.
Or he's going to try and buy a used one if he can find one. Anyway, Lou, before we open up this, because Kevin was helping me yesterday, because obviously he's worked at places that have had sexual issues and people doing weird stuff. And again, if you're in business long enough, you're going to find some firm where you're going to find some goofball or a lady or somebody somewhere along the line that does something that, you know, is inappropriate. That's not an excuse, by the way. That's just the way people are. I listened
to the discussion with Kevin yesterday.
That's why I texted you.
This is what I did. 30 years.
Was he pretty much spot on though from handling it as the employer? I thought he was.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, so sexual harassment becomes an actionable offense under Title VII in 1986 with a Supreme Court case called Meritor Savings and Vincent versus Meritor Savings and Loan, which is the first Supreme Court case that acknowledges that harassment of people is a form of discrimination actionable under Title VII. The law develops, the next big shift is around 1998 or 1999 with a pair of cases that are known as the Farragher decisions by the Supreme Court that really changes the burden of proof for companies and makes it much more likely that they're going to be found guilty of tolerating or allowing sexual harassment if they're not careful, and that's really where you see the major training stuff kick in the after the Farragher decisions, and we start really trying to scare people on this. The short answer is, and I'm just going to say this, you know, as bluntly as I can. Employment lawyers, you know, like me, are never going to go out of business or have a lack of business because employers keep making the same mistakes over and over again, and it doesn't matter how much you train, and it doesn't matter how much you try to install this in corporate culture. With respect to harassment cases, there is apparently a flat learning curve. It's not even a curve, it's just a flat line that it's very, very difficult for corporate culture to rise above. And part of it is because you keep bringing new people in who keep making this, you know, are unaware, apparently, of sort of the basic rules. What is happening with Bowman is the same thing that's happening with the Redskins, the Washington football team, sorry, with regard to Dan Snyder, where you have people, and I'm with Kevin on this. By 2010 or 2011, the Blackhawks would have had a harassment, an anti-harassment, anti-gender discrimination policy in place, and probably should have put something in place or had a mechanism in place to deal with the kinds of issues that are prevalent in this sexual assault claim. What happened was exactly what happens in every one of these companies where you find there's a problem. That reporting system works fine for relatively low-level employees who are harassed or have problems with supervisors coming on to them, and that mechanism is there for them, and that seems to work, or at least the company's aware of how that's supposed to play out. The problem is when you get it happening at the higher levels. And the company management looks around and says, well, you know, this guy's a good guy. And this sounds like it was consensual. And, you know, we really don't want to do the investigation. We don't want to, you know. And so you get this kind of half-assed, if you'll pardon the expression, half-assed response that really doesn't deal with the problem the way it should have. I have not read the report that was put out by Jenner and Black on the investigation of the Blackhawks. But I can tell you that an allegation of sexual assault should immediately result in an interview of both sides. It should result in an immediate assessment by the company as to whether this is an issue and how they want to deal with it. The fact that this was a coach interacting with a subordinate player is a red flag, and should have resulted in a much quicker response than the Blackhawks were.
Is a video.
I realized they were in the middle of a playoff situation, and you know, but it didn't appear that they did anything other than sit on it for about 3 weeks, and then after the playoffs, came to the guy and said, "Yeah, we'll let you resign." And without doing an investigation, without trying to figure out exactly what happened, or whether it was consensual or not, and it was just a very casual, or a much more, let me put it this way, it was a much more casual way of dealing with this than you should have seen under a company with a well-developed sexual harassment policy.
Well, here's where, explain this to me, if you can, because this is the part that really, and the fact that money's involved, I just, somebody, I mean, at some place, let's put it this way, let's keep this, I'll try not to be gross here, but if you got somebody who just, for whatever reason, I'm going to say it's a guy, but it doesn't have to be a guy, because obviously it could be a lady against a guy or another lady. I mean, because, but if somebody who, you know, is going to go grab ass on somebody, and because maybe they think that there is a, that somebody is receptive, be them male, female, whatever they are, and they're not. And somebody says, hey, look, I'm not interested. Okay, and then it continues to happen. I could see where that is a serious problem in the workplace. Okay, and you got to say to the guy, look, you're out of here, or the girl, you're out of here. This lady is not interested in other girls. Either stop or you're out of here. I mean, because you're bugging her and you're bugging us. I mean, at that level, I get it. But now, when you're talking about an assault, now I would
yeah,
say
physical contact. Yep.
But I'm saying now we're talking about if somebody follows somebody else in the bathroom and it's a full out rape. This is now no longer in my mind the business of the company. This is when you call the police. And I
agree with that. If you believe that in fact it was non-consensual, my understanding, and again I have not seen the report, my understanding is that the Blackhawks could not. They had literally had a he said situation, where the coach said it was consensual and the player said it wasn't, and so the Blackhawks, at that stage, it's a perfectly reasonable thing for the Blackhawks to say, okay, I can't figure out who's what here. But we don't want one of our coaches engaged in this kind of behavior with players, whether it's consensual or not. And so the coach is gone. that's a reasonable solution to that situation, and it's perfectly defensible if they can't. If there's no evidence,
I guess my question goes back to, if it's not consensual, it's a crime, Lou. I mean, how is there mechanisms to deal with that? I know, but
the employer has is that, but the employer frequently is not able to tell that.
No, but it's not
a decision based on something else.
But that's the job of a detective, not Joe Greenville.
No, it's not anymore. It's the job of the employer, at least in the minds of, you know, a lot of people who are going to bring these lawsuits.
This is exactly my issue with the employer worrying about people's outside job. That has no more. I mean, Lou, I don't care what kind of procedures.
I will tell you right now. It doesn't matter what your opinion is. Title VII and the court cases that have interpreted it make this a requirement. If you have two people who are engaged, who have some interaction, and let's say it's an assault. I had dozens of these cases, Chief. Let's say it's a basic guy walks up to his assistant, his secretary. She's wearing a relatively low-cut dress that allows him to put his hand down her dress, and he does. He comes up to her while she's sitting, working, comes up behind her, goes, "Boy, you look really good today," just slides his hand down the front of her dress.
That's pretty
and
crude.
Fondles one of her breasts.
That's pretty crude.
It is, but, you know, this happened. You know, and the employer, you know, the woman, you know, screams, "Get away from me," whatever. People hear the scream, but nobody sees anything. And she goes and complains immediately. The guy says, I didn't do it. Nobody sees it. It's her word that it happened. You have the scream. So now, what are you supposed to do? That's a physical assault. What are you supposed to do? The employer is not going to go to the police and file a police report because it could be sued by the employee, the guy, for making a false police report, defaming him, intentional infliction of emotional distress. So the employer says, I can't file a police report. The best I can do is try to mediate this. I've got a guy who's a senior guy who you know, is accused of doing this. He flat out denies it.
Well, it can't be his first time. It cannot be his first time.
But you don't know that.
Yeah, okay.
Frequently it is the first time that the employer is aware of it. And so the employer says, all right, fine. I'm going to transfer the secretary, but I got to be careful about how I do that, because if I move her to a position that's working for somebody who's not as important as this guy, then that might affect her career. But then I got to take this guy and sit him down and say, you can't do that. If you do it again, we're going to fire you.
Well, look,
if another episode comes up like this, we're not going to care about who's right or who's wrong.
All right, we're just
going to fire you.
All right, we started the day talking about incremental stuff. Now, I don't like, you're right. Nobody cares about my opinion. You're right about that. I don't like.
But how is this any different?
How is this any different than if somebody steals money out of somebody's bank account or somebody hacks it? How does or somebody's security account, which, you know, hopefully you can't do. We think nobody can do that anywhere here, or RBC or any place, but of course somebody probably is always smart enough. How does that has become a non-law enforcement event? All right, and unless it's like a gazillion dollars and you take down, you know, maybe the whole firm or something, and there's millions of people involved, that law enforcement has basically backed their way out of that. Now, and saying that's your problem. I don't buy the idea that all these things that are crimes are the job of the. I mean, you're right. It's where they're going, but I don't buy that's where it should be.
Yeah, the employer is not charged with enforcing the law. The employer is charged with maintaining a work environment that is not, quote, hostile, unquote, and that's where the employer is charged with doing these kinds of investigations. Let me give you an even worse situation, and this is again from personal experience. So you have a female associate, a junior attorney, who is working with a particular client, a very big client of the law firm, and the client becomes enamored with her personally and tells you, as the person who's managing his account, that I only want to see Susan on these meetings, and she's the one I want to handle all my stuff. I want to be able to call her or whatever. Now, you know that Susan is not competent to handle everything that comes in the door, but this guy wants her handling all of it. Susan, for her part, knows that she's in the catbird seat because she's now working with this huge client of the firm, and she's got this personal relationship, and this guy's business is coming to the firm through her. She also understands, or she also is not nearly as taken with this guy as he is with her. And so she comes to you and says, the client hit on me, and I don't like it, and I want it to stop. And so now, as the attorney, your job, because you're liable if she's getting targeted by a customer, you're liable. So now you're faced with this choice. Do you pull her off the account? And she doesn't want to be pulled off the account. What she wants you to do is go to the client and say, you can't do this with Susan. She doesn't like it. You need to stop. The client, who's a multi-million dollar company, repped and owned by this one guy, you think the client's going to be happy to have its lawyer come and say, you got to stop doing this?
Well,
so,
no.
So this is what you're charged with. You have to walk that tightrope. So to make a long story short, what I did in that situation, because it involved me, was I went to the client and did exactly that. What do you think happened?
Well, you dumped them. You got a new law firm.
That's right. They got a new law firm. And then what do you think happened?
The lady was pissed off.
Well, she was unhappy about that, but there was nothing she could do about that. She went to work for him.
Yeah, I'm saying it wouldn't. I thought you said they're married today or something.
Well, pretty close. I mean, I don't know if they're married today, but you know, 6 months after the client fires us, she comes in and says, I'm leaving. I said, where are you going to go? And she, well, I'm sorry to see you hear that. Where are you going? She said, I'm going to go work for this guy.
Yeah.
And I said, the guy that you told me to tell to keep away from you, you're going to go work for him? And she said, yeah, it's a great job offer. And I just rolled my eyes and, you know, this is the kind of, you literally, as an employer, you find yourself in these patent place kind of situations. Now, that's a far cry from, for example, what was happening with the Washington football team, also embroiled in a years old idiotic situation involving the cheerleaders. And don't ask me why a major corporate figure like Dan Snyder and the leadership team and management team of the Redskins thought it was appropriate, and the allegations are fairly stupid, but what's alleged is that these guys were doing things like telling the cheerleaders, you need to come in when you come into the office, you need to be wearing tighter fitting clothes and more revealing outfits, and oh, we think it would be appropriate if you started answering some of the calls from our major customers that buy our skyboxes who want to go out on a date with you. And we think you ought to start doing that. And why anybody, and apparently a lot of this is true because they fined the Redskins Snyder $10 million and told him to divest himself from the day-to-day operation of the team. So his wife is now running the team, if you believe that. But the idea that somebody thought this was okay, that you've got these attractive women working for you, and you can pick the phone up and call their management team and say, yeah, I think the girls ought to be out sleeping with some of our customers because the customers are interested. I'm sorry. That in 20, this, and this happened a few years back, so a lot of it's not actionable anymore. But the idea that you would think that was okay, I'm just astounded. However, hormones being hormones, this stuff keeps continuing.
Well,
that's why I say employment lawyers will always have a job.
Well, we got to go to break, but I say, what was the line that money has always been able to attract beauty, and beauty has always found money? I mean,
I wouldn't disagree with that.
No, I mean, whatever. So it's good we got money, or maybe somebody thinks.
Well, it's better to have money than not.
What in the immortal words of Coach Redman, if you got dough, they'll work with you, or something along those lines.
That's exactly right.
Lou, take care of yourself. SP Futures up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 82. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Hawley's Mr. Dave Scatine on the board. SP Futures up 11.75. They're up a little bit more a bit ago, but still we're up. NASDAQ Futures up 81. Do we have Mr. Dan?
Yes.
Dan, how are you, buddy?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm kind of very confused about the machinations of the bond market the last couple of weeks, but so maybe you can explain it to me. And
sure.
We have a bunch of people today that are listening in specifically for you, because they're looking to set themselves up with some things reasonably long-term with, when I say reasonably long-term these days is what, week and a half now? I mean, at least a little bit long-term, where they can get some kind of income, where they can stick with when all this passes, if it ever passes.
Sure. Sure, yeah.
So what do you make of the, I guess, after I saw the numbers last week going into the balance sheet, I guess I understood last week's run-up in the bonds. Well, how much are they pouring in this week? What are they going to do on Tuesday? They're going to try and be at $10 trillion by the time they say they're cutting back, or what are they doing?
Yeah, there is still a lot of money coming into the system, which I think is generally a problem across the board in the economy, not only in the bond market. But what's really happening with the bond market is there's two things that I think are worth noting. One is the flattening of the yield curve, which is something we've talked about before. When we talk about flattening, we mean the difference between the 2-year, which is now at 0.55, and the 30-year, which is under 2%. It's down, it's at 1.93. That difference in yield has been, over the last few weeks, has tightened, or it's actually decreased. And from the point of view, from an economic point of view, that generally means that we're expecting slower growth. And this is what's been true when you have a flattening to the yield curve. But I will also say, not to be surprised, that's part of the cycle, the bigger cycle that we're in. As you get inflation, you get a flattening of the yield curve, you get slower growth eventually. I think the market's anticipating things a little bit too early. But that is, and that's an indication. We had talked about that before. It started happening a little bit right around the time of when COVID hit last year, and then it widened that spread widened out again because there was a lot of optimism, and now it's tightening again because of the concerns about inflation. So that's one thing. The other thing that's causing the longer end of the Treasury market to rally, or the 10-year and the 30-year to be rallying here, is that there's a lot of buy interest, and the buy interest is coming from large institutions, pension funds in particular. And the reason for that is that they're aligning, I mean, they're trying to get their allocation more focused on fixed income. It's a bit of a flight to quality, a bit of thinking that the equity markets are inflated, and it's also part of their, generally when boards meet for pension funds, they're talking about a long-term forecast, and they're talking about sector rotation, but they also want diversification. So there are a lot of large buyers, and we also have buyers coming from overseas still. The German 10-year bond rate is still negative. So the U.S., believe it or not, looks like an attractive investment to German investors and European investors. And it also still, despite all of the concerns that we have here about the economy, Europeans still view us as being more, we're the ones that they look up to. We're the ones that they tend to follow in investments in general, but definitely in the bond side.
Well, Dan, clearly there hasn't been this, there are an awful lot of people alive today that don't remember the inflation thing last time. Like, to me, it was like yesterday. Okay, but
right.
I don't get how a big fund or whatever, if you buy a 30-year rate at 2%, and all of a sudden the market wakes up, well, it's kind of a two-part question, the market wakes up and realizes I'm giving somebody my money, and in 30 years at 10% inflation a year, the money I just gave them, they better make up for that too. That thing could trade below 50, for God's sake.
Right. It's a pretty, I would not be recommending that at all. I'm just saying that's the reason.
I agree with you.
Why it's happening, but I absolutely would not recommend long treasuries. In fact, on the bond side, high yield bonds, I think, still make more sense in here. High yield corporate bonds, and I would stay 2 years and under. So, and there you're not going to have that interest rate risk. And, inflation can help some of the companies, a few of the companies we've talked about, finance companies do well in this environment. And we had talked about a couple of bonds that we still own and we still like. One of them is Genworth. They have a 4.9%, almost 5% coupon that's due in August of 2023. So Genworth Financial, GNW. Again, you're not buying the stock. You're buying the yield that you're getting here, which, 5% or close to 5% isn't bad. And it's a 1.5-year. I mean, the bond matures in less than 2 years. So that would be a good investment. Another one, same industry, finance, AmTrust Financial, AFSI. And the coupon on that, the coupon interest rate is 6 1/8, due August of 2023. And that one's yielding even more right now. So that, you're wanting to buy on the short end, but there are some ideas. Again, you also want to stay in sectors of the market that will do well with inflation. So I think finance does well. Utilities do well. We had talked before, in general, utilities do well. But one name that we own that we like is Blue Hills, ticker symbol BKH. And they pay about a 5% dividend. Company is based in South Dakota. I really like the management team there. And that, again, utilities tend to do well when rates go higher.
Dan, how, when you, just a quick question, when you talk about the yield curves and stuff, I mean, you and I, we learn this stuff somewhere at the same time. So when you say, when the yield curve flattens, by the way, I'm looking here, for those that don't know, if you're looking at, and where are we? We're, 10/25, say, the, 1 month is 0.07, 2 months 0.10, Actually, 3 months is 0.06, which is kind of weird because it's 2 months is higher. But it runs out to 2.09 in a 30-year. So that's the yield curve that Dan's talking about. But Dan, when you say, okay, flatter yield curve, I mean, a truly inverted yield curve like it was in 1980, you know, where the near term was 15 and the 30-year was 12. I mean, that, I don't really know, I hope we never see that again. But I mean, how do you, when you make the comments, which by the way are from your experience and mine, how do you discount the fact that the entire yield curve is being manipulated by the Fed? I mean, I don't know that it tells me anything, because it just so happens those guys are buying this one this week. They're buying them all. I mean, it's not like it's a, you know, I don't see how the market's telling us anything when they're the market.
Right. Well, there'll be a meeting next week. The Fed will meet again next Tuesday and Wednesday, and we're, you know, I mean, what they should be doing, and we're hoping that they're doing, is starting to taper, and I think that will be a positive for all the financial markets, you know, for equities as well as fixed income. So it hasn't happened yet. You're right. There's still too much money being pumped into the system, which is not, you know, it just isn't good. I mean, if somebody has to pay for this, and then you still have this this infrastructure bill that's sitting out there that, you know, it's been going on for quite a while, and somebody's got to pay for that. So there is, I think, there's concerns about the fact that they're not just moving through with the first piece of it. That's my concern personally. I think that should be moving through, so that I think it gives people a perception, at least, that we're going to continue to build out our infrastructure, and it's going to be good for the economy over time. So, I guess on the equity side, if you're looking for something that's undervalued right now, any of the names, you know, looking for ideas that I think are relatively conservative, but have been hit because the infrastructure bill has been sitting. And we had talked before about MasTec. Ticker symbol MTZ, and that company does maintenance on cell phone towers. So we know that's going to continue to be a big industry, and they're definitely a leader in the industry. They a very well managed company, and that stock has sold off 15%, almost 20%, 20%. Another company that we talked about before is Aztec, ticker symbol ASTE. And they do, basically, they call it rock to road. So they do, they get the materials for all the materials for paving the roads. And they actually, one of their businesses is manufacturing actual road pavers, but then also, the materials that go into asphalt and all that. That's part of their business. So they're like sort of a pure play in infrastructure. And that stock is also sold off 20%. So I guess what I'm trying to say is there are opportunities in the market when there are things happening politically, or things happening like this, again, slow. I think there's the perception that the infrastructure bills, you know, may never pass, may never go through. But the reality is that these companies, we already have some bills in place, highway bills, et cetera, that are providing support to these companies, and it's just, you know, you're taking advantage of what perception is, or you're benefiting from negative perception in an industry that I think will continue to do well even if the economy slows.
Dan, are you having a fit? You don't have to answer this truthfully if you don't want. Well, you don't seem like a guy who can do anything else but tell the truth. Are you having a little bit of a I use the term brain fart, where everything that looks like it should be going up is going down? I mean, I'm sitting there. Yeah. I had a position. I actually was bearish on Intel, and I played it down like 5% on the earnings, and of course it goes down 10%. So I end up not making any. I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, let me get this straight. We got inflation all over the place. Everybody's recognized it. Yet gold can't go up, and we've got these just chip shortages, and yet everybody who makes chips and they can charge whatever they damn well please for a chip is going down. I'm like, what is wrong with this picture?
I absolutely agree. I think gold and silver are cheap in here. I mean, we have them as part of our allocation. I think it's good to have allocation to the metals right now. And you kind of look at the long term record. And generally, I know there's talk about why it's not happening, but I'll say that at some point, you know, as inflation becomes a bigger word it's already a big word, but it's happening. And I think as more people recognize that, they're going to be looking to those safer investments. So yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. The areas, when going back to the original question, and the areas that I think do, you know, have done well and will continue to do well, that are income opportunities, would be REITs that we've talked about, and two of the REITs that we've mentioned in the past that we own. One of them is Global Self Storage, ticker symbol SELF, and they pay a very attractive, you know, it's like 6.5% rate. And the stock has been up, I think, about 20% since we recommended it. But that's just kind of a steady eddy that pays us really fat yields. It's a good place to be. I don't think it's going to change based on anything going on, you know, with the economy. They're certainly not having any trouble. It's a company that's not having any trouble with supply chain issues or labor shortages right now. People, you know, are moving in this. You know, anybody who's renting space is going to do well in this environment. So this is a terrific company, and I think a good investment for some yield if you're looking for, you know, some yield in the.
How do you discount, or can you? I don't know if you can, but I'm asking. How do you discount? I mean, in the Chicago area again. I'm jaundiced by the fact that I live here. I got a downtown area that I'm wondering is ever going to, see the light of day. And all of a sudden, everybody gets essentially huge increases in their taxes. There's nobody in these buildings. Who the hell's going to? I mean, the self storage places are doing well. What if they double up? I mean, everybody and the governmental end where you are, unless a couple of states, I guess, get a lot of money from the government, so they think they're okay, right? Because they get this printed money, and they're even Chicago got enough printed money to where they don't have to raise the taxes all that much, but they're planning on it. I mean, what happens to the self storage places if next year they double their taxes? I mean, I see that as a possibility everywhere.
Yeah, this particular company that I'm talking about, Global Self Storage, focuses on smaller markets.
Okay,
and so they've actually benefited from the smaller cities, less expensive, less, you know, like we were talking before about Black Hills and Rapid City, South Dakota. That, you know, that's a booming area. Here in Florida, where I am, it's booming. Everything is booming here. Right? There's more people on the road. There's more people moving here, despite the reputation sometimes that Florida gets. It's busier, more crowded, more development than I think I've seen in 30 years being here. So it's, some of it is perception, and it's the self storage market in general is very competitive here. But this company that I'm mentioning focuses on the smaller markets, and they've actually been, like I said, they've benefited from the moves from big cities. And also they benefit when, you know, like if say somebody's moving to a smaller city and buying a new home and having to wait for the construction
because
of the supply chain issues, that actually benefits a company like this. People are having to keep their belongings in storage a little bit longer. So there are, I guess the point I'm making is that there are companies that will benefit. We're talking about buying a REIT. We're not talking about buying, you know, it's not a pure play equity. You're buying a company that pays out, is required to pay out more than 90% of their, on the dividend. They're required to pay out 6.5% of this particular company. There's no option of paying less. I mean, it's basically more like a bond is what I'm saying than an equity. Another one that Invesco has a mortgage REIT, which is even more like a bond because it's just basically a pool of mortgages that are paying, you're getting all the income off of these mortgages, but again, they're required to pay a fixed rate. And so those are some good ideas, I think, right now. That's one space that is doing well, and should continue to do well regardless of what's going on. And another that we've talked about before are preferreds. And again, when you're looking at preferreds, if you want to look for something that has some good yield, but also has, stability in terms of the industry it's in or, you know, the management of the company. And we've talked before about Blue Knight, which is, the company that does asphalt storage, and they are doing extremely well. Its ticker symbol is BKEPP. And we're talking about 10%, between 9 and 10% dividend yield. And, you know, since I mentioned them initially, the stock price is up more than 20%. Another preferred that falls, again, into the same category, high dividend yield, Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment. And they do, it's a media company that's focused on, they own Crackle, which is a network. You see, you know, that they do movies. They have a movie library and all that. And they're very well positioned. They've been well positioned. Again, we've seen more than a 20% increase in the preferred price, but we're still getting a 9% dividend yield. Again, a company that's not necessarily negatively impacted by supply chain issues and labor shortages. So these are, you know, we're looking at things that are stable, that are paying good yields. And then a third preferred company that preferred stock that I'd mentioned is Spire, ticker symbol SR. And the ticket symbol would be SRPRA. They're a natural gas company based in Alabama, and they have Alabama, Mississippi, and Missouri are the three areas that they're focused on. They're the primary markets that they're in. They have done a lot to, you know, reduce methane. They're like sort of on top of if you will, climate change issues. But they're also a really solid management team and a company that's been, you know, that has markets. They basically have a monopoly, if you will, in the markets that they're in. And an industry that I think is continuing to do well as gas prices.
Yeah, what do you make of the $6, which I don't think I've ever seen before in October, down to 490 something, back to 6 in a week and a half? This is not your grandfather's gas market.
Yeah. No, exactly. There's certainly been volatility in gas prices. I think some of it is, you know, the concerns, you know, big picture, I guess some of it is the concerns about the use of, you know, all the issues about climate change and the use of alternative energies and all that. And I think the reality is knowing the management, and like that's which we do because we meet with the management of the companies that we invest in. These guys are really a lot more on top of things than just look at them as a pure natural gas play. I think you have to look at a specific example to sort of weather that volatility or that, the commodity price.
Dan, which
is definitely, I agree with you, it's definitely, it's concerning, but it's not having a negative impact on Spire.
Well, if you're pulling it out of the ground at 2, it's banging back and forth from 5 to 6, I guess just a question of how much you make. But I guess my question, you've mentioned a few of these guys, the ones in the Northeast, and these guys, I'm not going to say they're all average, but if you and I owned a gas company in wherever, Pennsylvania, and we had a steady supply, wouldn't we have somewhat of a long-term customer that maybe, I mean, in other words, If the gas price goes from 5 to 6, does Spire necessarily do that much better, or they're already contracted at, you know, 4.95 or something to these guys for the next year or two, or the adjustments are 20% of the market price and not 100%? I mean, how do those contracts usually read? I mean, I'm sort of curious, and I would guess you might have the answer.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I guess in both, you know, oil and gas in general, the contracts that they have are generally long-term in nature, you know, and they can range from, you know, a year, but out to, say, 10 years. There's usually a range that they'll have, you know, or there's sometimes a cap that they'll have on the price. And it really, it kind of depends, I think, because each company is a little bit different in terms of the markets that they serve, you know, whether it's residential versus commercial. And they're, you know, this, like I said, this particular company, I'm not saying they're immune from commodity, you know, price changes, but they're not directly impacted. You're not going to see volatility in the price for the reason that you're mentioning. The contract is something that locks them in. Same thing with the energy business. It doesn't mean you're not going to get upside. You know, as energy prices have gone up, we've certainly seen an increase in the, you know, the energy sector in general, whether you're looking at equities or fixed income. And, you know, there is again more, the companies that have the contracts in place are going to generally be more stable when, you know, when the prices retreat again or when there is volatility. So we're always looking for the situations where there's going to be, you know, larger percentage of contracts locked in at a decent price, but also a company that has management and knows how to manage the environment. So if you remember, you know, years ago, certainly the environment's changed with Southwest Airlines, but years ago, one of the reasons they did well is that as, you know, oil prices were going up and their fuel costs were going up, they had hedged themselves probably better than the other carriers, and this was a number of years ago. And it's sort of the same concept here, is you want companies that are hedged, that have also hedged themselves on the downside. So for them to lock in a price is a good thing, because it creates more stability. You know, the cash flow is more dependable, and if you're looking at a preferred or a bond, you're certainly concerned about cash flow. So you're not going to have the upside, maybe, of an equity, but again, here I'm giving you some examples of income, you know, ways to invest in this environment. One other area that I want to mention, I've mentioned in the past, are floating rate notes, because they actually, there's an ETF called FLRN that is, floating rate, they're adjustable rates. So as short-term rates go up, you'll see an increase in the, in the income that you're getting in these ETFs. Bank loan funds are the same, senior bank loans, and there's an ETF, ticker symbol BKLN. And same thing, as rates go higher, these investments will benefit. So,
yeah,
you're not
locked
in
like
we were talking earlier, like with the 30-year bond at 2%. Here you're going to benefit as rates rise, and in particular short rates. And so these are some good investments now. I think if you're looking for, you know, a move into something that's conservative but's given some income, and probably will, I don't want to use the word hedge, but would give you a lot of downside protection as inflation scares and rates start increasing.
Yeah, when you get these ETFs, and I I've been involved with these ETFs since day one when the spider first came out, and we were trying to do one on the only. Do you trust these things? I mean, some of them promise you a massage and bring you a beer every day. Does a triple short or a triple long, if we actually go down 30% someday, are they going to give you 90%? I don't know if I trust them to do that.
Yeah, I agree with you. We haven't had the ETF market has become, it's certainly grown a lot in the last decade, but we haven't had a major downturn in the economy. So or a downturn in the equity market for that matter, that other than, some short-term situations last year. But I agree with you. The structure, the ETFs I'd be more concerned about would be, for example, in the high yield market or emerging market debt, emerging market equity. Less, you want to invest in an ETF. The irony is you want to invest to get the broad exposure in sectors, say international, where you can't buy them. I mean, the cost of buying them or finding them or having access to them is can be difficult. But the whole irony is that you're paying for this diversification. But I have concerns with, the liquidity issues.
Yeah,
when
me too.
We do have a downturn, or if there is a sudden, I don't think it's going to necessarily be sudden, but if there is if things are looking south, in general, we don't have a lot of history to be able to tell, and I'd be more concerned about having a specialized ETF in a specialized sector that's less liquid.
Well, these guys here you just talked about, because we got a dash here, but I'm going to say that they've set it up in a way that makes an awful lot of sense. We're not even knowing these guys, but I'm just wondering if we get an adjustment out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and all of a sudden we get a 1.5% number in November because they adjusted the housing number from 0.2 to or 2% where it is to 25% to where it really is. If all of a sudden, next January, February, we're getting whole numbers every month, I don't know how the hell. I tell you what, I couldn't set one up that my ETF kept up with that in terms of rate. Maybe these guys are that much smarter than me, but even with you helping me, I don't know if we could pull that one off. Could we?
No, I agree. I mean, I think it's. I do agree. I think we don't. The biggest issue that we have is that we don't have any history. We don't have any experience. We did have some downturns in ETFs in general. I think last year we had some you know, some rapid selling, if you will. There were, there was, you know, selling in a lot of the sectors. But the way they're structured, I have faith, I guess, in the way they're structured. But again, any, you know, product that hasn't experienced a, you know, a downturn, you know, each, again, it's going to be doing your homework on each individual ETF, and that's what we do. I mean, we look at the components, we look at the, you know, the manager, you know, and again, big difference between SPY and then looking at, you know, ARK, for example, ARKK, Kathy Woods Fund, huge difference, in terms of the way the, you know, so I think really understanding what you're buying is important.
Dan, take care of yourself, buddy. Thank you very much.
You too.
And, for all, especially for all these a few new ones here, I'm interested myself, and I'm sure I have some clients that will be as well. SP Futures up 14, NASDAQ Futures up 87. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Dave Scatina on the board. SP Futures up 1350. NASDAQ Futures up 85. Big news that just came out. Economic growth rate slows to 2%, as opposed to a 2.8. And I'm dying to find, I haven't seen it yet, the PCE deduction here, because I'm going to say we're underwater, and I'm going to say the term stagflation applies. David, how's that for a nasty...
Not a good start to the day, Tom.
No, not a good start to the day. We have the Dow up 78. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 278.9%. Shanghai down 43, that's 1.2%. Hang Seng, which was down a bunch yesterday, down 73.3%, so not much today. We're in Europe. DAX down 29.2%, FTSE down 11.2%, CAC around up 39.6%, so CAC around is the only one up over there. Yesterday, again, we've sold off huge at the end of the day. So the Dow was down 266, S&P down 23 after being up most of the day. NASDAQ finished positive 12 cents, mostly all due to Google and Microsoft having big days. Bonds, 1.54, unchanged. The Bund, minus 0.17. It's actually up 1 basis point, so they're even a little lower than that. Japan, positive 0.09, like they've been forever. Even though the Bank of Japan came out today with and didn't change their outlook. Oil down 89 cents, 81.77. Brent down 81 cents, 83.77. Natural gas down 12 cents to 6.07. Still way, well, not way above, still above $6. Our Bob down 2 cents at 2.42. We've got gold up $9.10 now at 18.07. Silver unchanged at 24.19. We got copper up 3 cents at 4.42. Where are we at here? Bitcoin up 2,300 to 61,007. David, we have for us traffic, weather, sports. Kind of dreary out.
Yeah. It's going to be a cloudy day today in Chicago. It's currently it's 54 degrees. Cloudy. We're going to have showers today. We'll have a high of 56. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 55 and clear skies at the start of the day. They're going to have a beautiful day, 89 and sunny. Traffic, normal buildups on, well, actually it's kind of messy right now on the Eisenhower and the Kennedy. Few accidents that were earlier are pushed off to the side, but it's going to be a slow trek into
work. So if they're
work.
All pushed off to the side, what happens to the guys who ride down a shoulder at 100 miles an hour? They run into the accidents?
Yeah, then I'll see more accidents. In sports, Major League Baseball World Series Game 2, Houston wins 7-2 to tie up the series. In NBA, the Bulls take on the Knicks tonight. Suns drop one to the Kings, 110-107. In the NHL, the Hawks lose, winless Hawks lose, to Maple Leafs 3-2 in overtime, and Arizona takes on Tampa Bay tonight. In the NFL, the Packers are at the Cardinals, undefeated Cardinals tonight, and the Bears are home Sunday taking on the 49ers. Back to you, Chief.
Bears better win this one because they only got Detroit left to beat after these guys.
I'm not convinced they can win another game if they keep it at this rate.
Well, Detroit up there on Thanksgiving morning, they're usually pretty tough Thanksgiving morning.
Detroit's not going to lose every game.
So the Bears, they got the Bears penciled in or circled on the schedule.
Yeah, I think so.
Do we have Mr. Flanagan with us?
Yes, we do.
John, how are you?
Good morning.
John, there might be a field trip tonight to Lachette's last week of Oktoberfest.
Oh, really?
We're thinking about it. So you got to work on your excuse.
Nope. Maybe I'll actually show up, Tom.
Oh God. we got people wagering on the excuse.
You're making a book on me? Oh, no.
Anyway, I got a question for you because you're my man who observes all society. And everybody else has their field, and I'd love talking to them. But I want to talk a little bit about this. I'm going to say it's a trial balloon. When was the last time you heard that term? A trial balloon regarding this taxing people's wealth versus their income. You know, I think it's kind of a non-starter. Plus, I don't see how the hell you'd write the damn thing. So if somebody their stock is way up, and you send them a bill. And, okay, so then they gotta pay it, which probably means they gotta sell the stock. So now if the stock goes back down, they're not as wealthy anymore. Do you give them the money back or do you keep it?
Well, you might be able to kick your losses or gains down the, road a bit for the next year, but don't you see this as a complete boondoggle when it comes to either measuring people's wealth from year to year or even filling out a tax return?
Well,
This is going to be endless litigation of, determining valuation dates, whose figures you're using. I mean, when you think about real estate, is Zillow going to become our IRS advisor? I mean, this is kind of insane to even imagine it could happen.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is, as I've led you down the trail here, I'm going to go with what I always use her as a foil. My friend AOC, who's not my friend and probably wouldn't like me at all, but anyway, my friend AOC, what I'm trying to say is when people look at our current system, there's a lot of things that jump out at you and say, that's kind of really wrong. and obviously in terms of taxation, the people who cluck you know, like chickens about how they've managed to get around the system forever. Other people are pissed off at it, to be perfectly blunt. I mean, I'll take two examples. On the one hand, if anybody, not that anybody we know would ever do such a thing, if, for instance, like you don't want to shovel your snow, and you have a guy or a couple of guys, or I guess ladies could do it too, they come by, and every time it snows, you give them $25, okay, and you got a big, nasty winter, and all of a sudden a couple of them are worth $50, because you got 8 feet or something. So at the end of the year, you pay the guy or girl $1,000. Well, I'm going to say that you, if this is a building that you and I own, if we want to deduct that $1,000, we're going to have to send Mortimer, or whoever did it, we're going to have to send this poor fellow a 1099, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Now he is supposed to send, now, of course, if this is all the money the guy's making, I'm going to say that $1,000 is like long gone. Well, the IRS is going to want $150 from this guy. We're not even talking taxes. We're talking about payroll taxes. The minimum as an individual is 15%, right, or thereabouts. And so they come after the low-hanging fruit like there's no tomorrow. All right, now flip this around to, you know, Mr. Arrogant Elon Musk. Not that he's not a genius, he is. Now he's got this company. All right, you could make a case that, all right, the guy puts some stock money into the place. I don't know how much. I mean, I guess I could find out, but it doesn't really matter. Now the stock is ballooned up to where, let's say the guy's worth, you know, $10 billion. I don't know what the number is. Probably more than that. Probably way more than that. Let's say it's $10 billion. All right, so the guy, now he gets a salary there, so he's going to pay income tax on that. We've given the guy, because of some moron that came up with this carbon credit stuff, the company doesn't make a dime. What they do is they get a carbon credit for every car that they put out, and they get to sell that to other car companies or other people that don't have them, that need them because they're still producing gasoline cars. So we've given this guy, what have we given that company, John? $5 billion, $4 billion, $3 billion that he sold to other people that we've given him? It's like we gave him money that somebody else has to have to produce something. All right, so now the guy's worth $10 billion in stock. Now he's probably sold some of it, but maybe he hasn't. Say he sold none of it. He's now, you know, wealthier than the dreams of avarice. And oh, by the way, if he puts in his will that he's going to leave the stock, if he has any kids, I don't know if he does or he doesn't, he's going to leave them to his kids, and he croaks next week, the basis for the kids now becomes the stock price today, which is, over $1,000, and nobody ever pays a dime on anything. And the stock is $1,064, up $26. And the person sitting there looking at my snow shoveling guy sending in a $150 check, and this guy, it doesn't take, even if you don't like her, it doesn't take an AOC to look at this and say something is seriously wrong, John. Now, I happen to think this wealth tax is a really bad idea, but it's also, but the whole mess is wrong. Just saying.
It's wrong, and, you know, but yet I have to put this into some kind of comparison. If the wealth tax that's being bandied around seems to me a way of making it so burdensome that you can't own an asset. In a year where it's something you own appreciated tremendously in value, you'll have to sell the
right
asset in order to pay your tax liability if you can't afford to own the thing. Which, you know, I mean, it's one thing if you sell it and you have, you know, a capital gains that you have to reinvest, or if you can shield it in some way or pass it on through a stepped-up basis, but it isn't like you have to immediately shed the asset and maybe take a loss, you know, on what the thing is worth because you have to get rid of it fast. You owe the tax anyway. I think it's a way of encouraging an attitude that, you know, who needs to own this stuff? It's far too expensive to, you know, have private property in large dollar amounts for the average person. And I think it's all what I've been saying before. It's a way of influencing the mindset that we can't really tolerate, or we can't afford the luxury of owning personal property. which I, you know, this is the globalist agenda, kind of in a nutshell.
Well, I mean,
all it does is concentrate.
I'm with you on people
who can manage it better because they have more of it, and everybody else is you know, has to give it away at fire sale prices.
But Jan, we have the tax law, the stupidity. Well, you know what? It's not stupidity if you're on the good end of it. The stupidity of the tax law has created this monster in a lot of ways. I mean, there since we were in college, which is a while ago, the ignorance of the double taxation on dividends has caused guys like Warren Buffett to never pay a dividend. Well, you wouldn't have as much of this accumulated wealth in Warren Buffett's grimy hands if every year the guy paid a dividend out to people that own the place. Well, you wouldn't have this. I mean, if you and I owned, you know, a hot dog stand that became 100 hot dog stands, if we were not discouraged tax-wise from paying dividends, we may not go to 200 hot dog stands. We might just say, you know what, we're not making that much money in the last one we did anyway. We might actually pay money out to investors and spread it around. But the government is, on the one hand, they're almost forcing you, tax-wise, to become this monolithic thing. It's maybe way bigger, not only than it should be, but way bigger than it makes sense to be economically. And I think we've done that by the double taxation of dividends. So why don't we try the idea of the step-up basis is insane. I mean, why somebody should pay that tax somewhere. I mean, don't you think?
But when the asset is sold, sure.
Yeah. I'm not for this thing at all. But my point is, I'm looking at this mess, and I'm saying, here's a guy that seems to have $90 billion and never has paid a dime. Well, yeah, but it's in a asset. Well, why are the assets that big? Well, he's got all this stock. Well, why doesn't he just pay a dividend? In which case, it would become income. Well, they don't want to do that because of the tax rules. Well, why don't we try and fix the stuff that is causing people to be like this in the first place? And what, you know, Berkshire Hathaway the guy doesn't need half the cash. I mean, because of what he does, he waits for bad times and he picks up things on the sly and actually helps the economy out doing that. I don't have any problem with what Warren Buffett does. But I'm saying if dividends were not double taxed, he couldn't get away with his shareholders giving him nothing forever. You know, so
I think that must be their plan, Tom. Well, it would have been changed.
Well, yeah, obviously, but I mean, to me, it's, you know, capital gains. If we had a CPI that was worth a crap, what you would do is you'd index capital gains, right? You'd say you bought a house 20 years ago and the CPI was at 100, and here it is at 200. The house went from 40,000 to 80,000. You didn't make any money, Jan, did you?
No.
So index those things and give everybody the same rate and, you know, upper rate. I'm not saying you should pay the snow shovel guy 30%, but say anybody who makes over whatever, you know, a couple hundred thousand a year, the rate should be 28%, 30%, something like that, something that's reasonable, not 50 or not 39. And corporations should pay the same damn thing. And oh, by the way, if they pay out a dividend, they should be able to deduct the dividend because the next guy's paying that. This is so simple. Now you have no incentive to have some massive pot of cash at Apple that you don't want to pay dividends to people, they pay a little bit. You have no incentive to do that. Okay, so the idea that you have an Elon Musk that's worth $90 bazillion and never has paid a dime in taxes, and oh, by the way, get rid of the carbon credit, right? I mean, there's a few fixes here that if we used our head, and of course, of Elon Musk, you don't want to fix that, right? He wants his carbon credit. And he's got more power than you and I.
It's simple. It's probably too simple.
Yeah.
Ever to be implemented. I figured the other day, was it 39% of the population pays all the income tax?
Okay, but the income taxes are only one-fourth of all the taxes paid.
Yeah. But this is something that a system like that has been institutionalized, you know, and enshrined, really.
Okay, but don't. No, you're. I don't think you are, because you could be sneaky enough that maybe you are. Everybody always says that Flanagan's kind of sneaky. Let's say, for instance, you're a one percenter for a second. I don't think you are, but again, you're kind of sneaky. So, yeah, but
which end of the scale you're looking at, huh?
whatever somebody says, and which you just did, by the way, on radio or TV, look at all the people that don't pay taxes. I can point to being at least a 10%er. Because if you're worried about your income tax, it means that you're doing pretty good.
Right.
Because here, let me give you the numbers here. Maybe David doesn't even know this, although these are tax revenues. Your federal government gets $2 trillion from income taxes. They get $1.3 trillion from payroll taxes. All right, so there's two legs of the stool there. Of course, the tariff is $69 billion. So not much there. Corporate tax is like $363 billion, which is only 7% or 8% of their total take. So right out of the gate, anybody, the AOCs of the world is looking at that going, wait a minute. 25 years ago, that used to be 25% or 20%. Now it's down to 7. Why the largesse for these guys, right? I mean, really? 7% of all of it? But look over here. State revenue, $2 trillion. Local revenue, $1.6 trillion. So even the people who, quote, don't pay income tax are still paying payroll, local, and state, all three of which are usually very regressive, right? So the only one that is somewhat progressive, I'm not saying that it should be all progressive, is the income tax. So income tax is only, what, 3.3, 5.3, 6.3, 7.2. Income tax is only like 26% of all the taxes paid. So when you say, you know, we need to broaden the tax base and all this other kind of crap where we're going to charge some guy who makes 10 grand a year 25% income tax. I know where you're coming from when you say that, and it's coming from the rich side.
Well, it shows, I mean, that the tax code has become so unbelievably complex because
right.
of the loopholes that are strung through it, and then they become sacrosanct, and you can't ever really get rid of them. All you can do is kind of, you know, enshrine them further. Is essentially unfair in my book. I mean, if it weren't this way, I don't think that you would need to have things like payroll taxes as burdensome as they are. But the flow to the government is really out of whack. And as a result, the average person who's just, you know, a wage earner and has no property, no real wealth at all, is scourged.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You're screwed.
And you know, I don't see that is equitable. It's not, you know, a recipe for anything but disenchantment, and it makes things like property tax, you know, craziness even worse for people. They really are already kind of locked into a system where they never see a lot of their salary.
Well, that's why when you, and this is somewhat of the, when I say the Republican mantra, I don't know what the Republican mantra is now. I don't know what the Democratic mantra is. I know what the people who say they're Republicans and Democrats that are controlling the place, I know what their mantras are. I don't think they remotely resemble my Democratic mantras or a lot of moderate Republican guys I know their mantras. I could easily switch back and forth between a moderate Democrat and a moderate Republican at the drop of a hat. I don't know if there's any much difference between the two, do you?
No. And in this kind of topic we're talking about, I don't think there is any difference.
And well, so what I'm looking at is that when people do this kind of stuff, these wrongs that they're trying to right, they're going at it with a blunt instrument, and they're going at it because they really don't understand probably what they're talking about. I mean, I don't know if AOC knows anything about tax theory. I bet she doesn't. Maybe she does. I don't know. I don't want to underestimate anybody. But these blunt types of, but they're not, it's not like there isn't a problem. I mean, a symptom of a problem. I mean, that's why when the Republican mantra is to lower corporate income taxes and shove some stuff back to the states. Okay, now mind you, the minute you do, you go from a progressive tax system to a regressive tax system. So if you don't, in other words, if the federal government decides to not help out with, I'm not saying they should or shouldn't, but if they decide that they're not going to help out with, say, Medicaid, and they're going to kick that insurance stuff back to the states, which they have done. They did under, I don't think it was it Trump? Was it Bush? One of them. You kick that back to the state. Okay, well, look where the state gets their revenue. They get their revenue from property taxes, sales taxes, and some state income taxes, which are not progressive. So what you've done is you've taken your corporate tax to the extent they even pay now is not paying anything for this stuff, and you've kicked it all back to, and maybe you want to do that, okay, maybe you don't, but at least we should recognize what we're doing, because every time you go from one place to the other, their revenue comes from a different source, and some of those sources are a lot different, okay? I mean, would I rather have, Microsoft that is not paying what I consider to be the right size dividend? Would I rather have them pay a little more and not kick something back to the States? Yeah. But I really want them to pay the same amount as everybody else. And to the extent that they give the money back to the shareholders, they should be able to deduct it. So a company that makes $90 bazillion, if they pay out $90 bazillion in dividends, they don't pay a dime, John, in my world.
That would be just fine with me. But you know, look at it on a local level, Tom, and the problem, you know, with the whole wealth tax idea is that we've got such a cumbersome government that is so expensive to run. We've got so many people we're trying to, you know, send money around to, that we're going to have to find some, you know, source of revenue in taxes that we've never really been willing to investigate before, and now we're desperate for this money. But look at the school system in Chicago as just one example of something really supported entirely by property taxes. I would say, look at the Chicago homeowners tax bill. There are 100,000 fewer students in the school system in Chicago between now and 20 years ago.
And it's got to be 40,000 in 2 years ago. Now, I bet it's 40,000 2 years ago.
When I think about that, you know, you would think that this is a system that should either be shut down or at least reinvestigated and have how much bloat and fat carved out of it. And that includes administrators probably more critically than getting rid of teachers. But it means closing a boatload of more schools than we've already closed. But the tax bill that the average, you know, the person in Chicago is paying, what are they paying for? Where is this money?
Well, John, when you said...
You would think you could have the number of teachers and probably get by if this were a real market system, which, of course, it isn't. But where is this ever going to get evened out or made fair?
It's not. It's not
going to happen.
And it's not until we go under, which we don't want to do. Next, let's talk about it on Monday, because this whole fairness in taxes, and we're, because you just mentioned that they need new sources of revenue. I'm going to say I'm going to do work this weekend. I'm going to take some of the states that are real high taxes, and even here in Illinois, and I'm going to try and determine how much of a regular person's paycheck goes to taxes. And I bet we're astounded. I bet it's well over 50% in a lot of these states. Yeah. I don't think you can get a new revenue source.
And then if you were to carve up municipalities, I think would be even more shocking.
Let's try raising property taxes on buildings downtown with no renters in there. See how that flies. I mean, really? anyway, SP Futures. SP Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 73. John, maybe I'll see you tonight. I'll be back tomorrow. Stacks and Jacks.
Let's shut down Irving Park, right?
Right.
I'll be on the lookout.
Oh yeah, we'll see.
Keep posted.
Yes.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.